Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another show of At Home with Victoria, with your host, Victoria Gaither, and co-host, Michael Kay.
Good evening, everybody. Very warm and balmy Thursday evening, Thursday, March 8, 2012. Tonight, I am Michael Kay, your entertainment co-host for At Home with Victoria, and thanks for joining us in another episode. The lovely Victoria, we all heard about her Revlon experience, her big photo shoot and stuff, which was fantastic, turned out well. Of course, landed her with a very large cold, so she will not be joining with us tonight. But I'm excited. We got a great, great lineup of guests. Erin James, Maryland resident, or Maryland born, and now a Nashville resident, is steaming up the Nashville waves. So she's going to be joining us a little bit later with some of her new songs and new music. But first, we're going to go to a good friend of mine, who I'm happy to call new friend, but I met Paul Bright up in New York when I was covering the Indie Soap Awards, the third annual, but a fantastic actor, producer, director, filmmaker. I'm sure he makes cupcakes too, but everybody, this is my good friend Paul Bright. Paul, thanks for joining us tonight.
Oh, Michael, it's a delight to be with you. I'm so sorry to hear that Victoria's under the weather. That's terrible.
I know, she so wanted to be here, but you know, she pushes herself to a fault, but we'll certainly say hi to her and everything. But so, my friend, New York, with lovely weather today, what does the average New York filmmaker do on a day like today?
Well, honestly, I was indoors almost all day because I'm editing my next feature film. And so I was up until 3 o'clock last night. I got about 4 hours sleep, and then I was up again this morning, just working away, trying to slug it out. Yeah, I did get out for lunch, so I got some soup and some fresh soup and fresh fruit for lunch. But then otherwise, man, I've just been working.
Yeah, well, that is life of a filmmaker. But let's take a walk backwards, Paul. You were born in the Midwest, is that correct?
Actually, I was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Albuquerque, New Mexico. Wow. That would be a very, not a large dwelling, not a large city.
At that time, see, when I was born and when I lived there until I was about seven, and the town was pretty small. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally the Mesa started the block after the street that we lived on, and it was about another 2 miles before you got up to the Sandia Mountains. And now, if you are in Albuquerque, or if you go back to Albuquerque, you'll see that it's grown all the way from the volcanoes on the west side all the way up into the Sandias on the east. So it's really, the town has changed a great deal from when I was a kid living there.
Wow. What did your parents do?
Dad was a Methodist minister, and my mom was teaching home ec. She passed away when I was 5 years old, and so we moved away when my dad remarried, and I moved to L.A. when I was seven.
Wow. So your father raised you, basically.
Well, I mean, I was raised by a lot of people.
Well, especially in the church.
Yes, exactly. I mean, after my mom died, Dad still had all of his obligations, and so I was every night being tucked into bed by like a babysitter kind of person. My older sister took on some mothering roles, and then, of course, when Dad remarried, suddenly my older sister was replaced by his new wife. So there was a little bit of tension there in the household.
Yeah, to say the very least. And then at that time, did you know you were gay at that time? Because that would have been a kick in the rubber parts, you know.
Well, I didn't know that it was called gay. We moved to L.A. when I was in second grade, and in third grade I had my first boyfriend. And I just knew that I loved hanging out with Michael. Michael Tanaka was his name. And I don't know if he thought of me as a boyfriend or not, but I know that we kissed on the lips. We'd walk around holding hands.
So, and how old were you this time?
Third grade. What is that,
third
8 years
grade.
Old?
Yeah. All the innocence back then.
Oh, I mean, what is that? I guess that's boyfriends, if you kiss a guy and hold his hands walking around.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a title to it, you know, and I think I was probably around, grade two when that happened, when I started to discover that my uncle started looking really, really attractive coming out of the shower. But, you know, and the, you know, it's only good if you're that young thinking that way, because I think I was born a little bit of a, you know, piggy. But when did you get the filmmaking bug? And again, too, I mean, I've watched two of your films now. I've seen Abrupt Decision and Altitude Falling. Angora Ranch and Theft just got here today, and I know I'm missing one, but I just want to let everybody know that you can go ahead and find Paul's films on Amazon.com. Just type Paul Bright in the search bar, everything pops right back up. And I encourage you to actually purchase the DVD versus download anything, because I think all of us listening here in chat are of old school nature, where you have to have the DVD to support the artist. So I just wanted to go ahead and throw that out. But what title am I missing? Theft, Angora Ranch, Abrupt Decision, Altitude Falling. What else am I missing?
Angora Ranch. Oh, Aaron, I'll Be the 6-Year-Old.
Okay. And then
so,
your new one.
Yeah, and then Abrupt Decision was the one that's just released that people can get on DVD. And then I'm right now editing another movie called Goliad Uprising. Goliad is going to premiere this coming May.
Right.
So that's why I'm in the hustle to get it finished with the edit. I've got a lot of work still to do, but...
Yeah. When did you get the filmmaking bug? I mean, I would take it. Well, back in our day, back then, what did we have for a video camera? This was big, heavy things that you used to lug around.
Yeah, back in our day, we didn't really have video cameras. At least not my day. I liked theater as a kid. When I was in high school, I suddenly joined the theater arts program, which totally astounded my parents. They couldn't believe that I had done that. Mm-hmm. And to me, that meant that they obviously hadn't been paying attention, since I'd been doing talent shows all in junior high and puppet shows in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in high school, in my junior year in high school, I was in L.A. at this point, and something happened that's never supposed to happen. A talent agent actually came into our high school theater arts rehearsal, and he set up a meeting for me to come down and talk to him in his office a couple days later. And I didn't tell my parents because I thought this was, you know, this is probably a scam.
Right.
What legitimate agent is going to come to a high school?
Right.
So anyway, so I'm talking to him, and he says, well, you need to get headshots, and here's the card of somebody who can do headshots for you, and it's about $100. And so I walked away, and I'm going, yeah, okay, so here's the ripoff. He charged me $100 to get pictures taken. Well, my dad had this distant friend who was a soap opera actress, a very, very well-established soap opera actress in those days. And so he calls her up, and he's like, Marla, have you ever heard of this agency? And she said, yes, it's one of the top three agencies.
Wow.
And Dad's like, well, they want to sign Paul. She's like, do it. So as it turns out, I was very fortunate. I had a very unique look, and I had a kind of a quirky personality, and I wasn't thinking a whole lot about the pressure or the stress of being an actor. And so I was just very natural. And so I did well. I made a lot of commercials when I was 16, 17, all the way up until I was about 23. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it was in 1986 you actually did an episode of Night Court.
Actually, I did an episode of Divorce Court.
Divorce Court, there we go. I'm just going up on court here.
I would have loved to have been on Night Court. Yes, no, Divorce Court. Divorce Court, by the way, is not real. All those people are actors. They're not real people. No, I did Divorce Court. I was on a TV show with Lonnie Anderson called Easy Street. I was in a movie with Dudley Moore called Mickey and Maude.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, when I was 23 at this point, I was kind of outgrowing that teenage awkward look, and they were starting to cast people my age as young husband, but I didn't look like a young husband. And it was also when I was 23 that I had to finally accept that I was really attracted to men. I'd had girlfriends, and I'd try to get my feelings toward men just to kind of transfer them over to my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the women who I dated very much, very, very much, but it wasn't the same. So I fell in love with a guy who was quite a bit older than I was, and because of my somewhat social conservative upbringing, I believed that, you know, if you're in love with someone, then you settle down and you make a life together.
Mm-hmm.
And Hollywood back in the mid and early 1980s was very, very homophobic. And I'd heard lots of people saying very nasty, snide things about openly gay people, gay actors. And I just didn't want people talking about me that way behind my back.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still very delusional. I ran off to live with this older man and sort of more or less abandoned all of my friends. I remember my dad put me on the Greyhound bus, and he was crying as I was getting on the bus. I had literally two suitcases, and that was going to be my whole life from this point on. And Dad was struggling to understand. He just he couldn't really grasp how this was possible. His son was gay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I've done a whole lot of things in my life since then, trying to find a place where I would really fit in and where people wouldn't say snide and nasty things about me anymore. And of course, I lived in very conservative towns, and I worked in very blue-collar jobs. I was a railroad conductor. I worked for an airline, which I thought the airlines would be really accepting, and it turns out the airline I worked for was really not at all accepting at that time. And I was a bus driver. I was a farmer for a while. I was a teacher, and when you're a teacher in Texas, the very last thing that you can stand up in front of class is say, oh, by the way, I'm gay. Just let all of you students know.
It's so funny that through your self-discovery of gaydom, you basically covered every gay stereotype on the planet, the gay farmer, the gay stewardess, it's so funny that an industry, again, Hollywood is an evil bug. I think either you're in or you're out, either you're on the inside or you're on the outside. I think it's hard to crack a toe in the middle. And because I'm sure you would agree that back in the 80s, gay was rampant, especially in Hollywood.
It was. And what had just happened is Rock Hudson had died from AIDS.
Right.
And so that, but the problem with that is that we also had Ronald Reagan, who refused to say the word AIDS.
Right.
And because of Rock's death, it suddenly became this huge stigma that anybody who was gay might possibly have this horrible, horrible cancerous disease, which nobody really understood very well. And
right.
So it was the worst kind of black plague imaginable beyond just the health issues. It also became, don't you dare cast this person.
Right.
So a lot of actors who may have been fairly open before suddenly went deeply, darkly into the closet, and they wound up marrying women or they wound up dating women. Proved that no, in fact, they weren't gay.
Wow.
And it was horrible. The thing that was so ironic to me is that it was about 10 years ago I realized that what I missed most in my life after trying to do so many other things that I enjoyed was that I missed theater and I missed performing and I missed telling stories. So I started a theater company in this small little town that I lived in just south of Austin, Texas. And the gay theater, the theater company got the reputation in town as being called the gay theater company, which was, it was just inconceivable to me because we weren't doing gay-themed shows.
Right.
But it's because I was gay.
Wow.
So
we're just really happy.
It's like, oh, well, that's the gay theater. And the very first year that we were running this theater, there was no one from our small town who would actually come to this theater. All of our audiences were coming from Austin and Bastrop and San Marcos and larger, more urban environments that were a little bit more understanding and wanted to see some really cool drama. And so we were doing some really unique pieces. So that was very, very fulfilling. But after 3 years of running this production company and doing these shows, I realized, I can make a feature film in a year for the amount of effort that I put into staging 12 productions.
Right.
And ultimately, I hope more people wind up seeing this movie than all, 12.
Could ever see it in person, yeah.
Right, in a theater. So that's why I made Angora Ranch.
Right.
And I made Angora Ranch with my partner, who was the love of my life, Tim Jones. And he wanted to do a story about May-September romance, to which I told him, well, I've got an experience with that. And I wanted to do a story about a gay person interacting with his father. And so Angora Ranch is a combination of the lovers who are 20, 25 years apart in age, and then there's the issue with both of their fathers, both the older man and the younger man have issues with their dad. And so that's what the story of Angora Ranch is about. And it's been interesting because when Angora Ranch first came out, it's a truly indie film. It's rough around the edges. The production values are pretty low. And it got a lot of harsh reviews. It came out right after Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, really?
Brokeback Mountain. So here the gay community had just seen this multi-million-dollar feature film with well-known actors, beautiful, gorgeous, and there was suddenly this expectation that, oh, Hollywood now loves the gays and embraces the gays, and so now all of the gay-themed films will be this gorgeous high production quality. well, all right, we know that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 6 years later, we know that's still not really the case.
Yeah.
So Angora Ranch was immediately being compared to Brokeback Mountain in so many ways. Well, of course, you know.
Well, because that was the only reference.
You can't compare.
Well, there's a couple things that bugged me about Brokeback Mountain. Number one, the amount of money put into telling a story that was so quiet I couldn't hear anything but mumbling halfway through it. Number two is the two key actors weren't gay, which pissed me off. I mean, can't you just hire another gay person to play a gay person in a gay movie? I mean, why do all the straight guys have to go ahead and muscle in and play that? That could be like a gay fantasy kind of a thing, but that's what I found with Brokeback Mountain. Plus, what I'll say as a generalization of your films is I could see a couple similar things going on. Number one, you're always teamed up with a younger guy, which I think is very, very smart of you. You're always making up with some young hottie on there.
That's the case with Angora and Altitude. But anyway, okay, go ahead, yes.
And Altitude, absolutely. But what I also love, too, is you almost have this Atomagoyan kind of feel to the way that you tell a story, the way that you edit it, too. The rough around the edges part of it is part of the charm. You know what I mean? Tom has that kind of dark, not dark, but delves in a little bit deeper into the psyche of the characters and stuff. And that's what I see as a recurring kind of feel to your movies. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I would say that's very, very true.
Yeah.
Very true. I mean, it's not only that, but I often use a lot of the same actors over. In fact, I have two female actresses who have been in every one of my films. And I'll continue to cast them in every film. It's always interesting to me, a challenge to see what different roles I can put them in to make them fit. So the people who've seen all my movies are like, oh, wow, that's Cynthia Schievel. Oh, wow, that's Peggy Mae Benn. What a surprise.
Yeah, I saw them in both Abrupt and Altitude Falling, the mother and the grandmother of your ex, of your lover, actually, in Altitude Falling. And then was the mother of your lover in Altitude Falling, was that the same woman as in Abrupt Decision as well?
No. That's Brenda Kusimba, who's in Altitude Falling. She's a wonderful actress who lives in Houston. And let's see. In Abrupt Decision, that's Cynthia Schievel, who plays the role of Stephen Callahan's mom.
Right.
And then Peggy Mae Benn is the kind of crazy nutso neighbor in Abrupt Decision. Before that, in Altitude Falling, she was a bureaucrat who was spying on people, essentially. Before that, in Aaron, I'll Be the Sex Hero, she's a senior citizen on this funky wild trip going to Big Bend National Park, and she's kidnapped by drug runners. Before that, in Theft of the Drag Queen's Wig, also known as Theft, she is a church lady who just can't believe the improprieties of the gay bar that are going on. And then, of course, in the very first movie, Angora Ranch, she's the one who runs a motel, who's flirting with the young guy who comes to town, who knows that the young guy is also dating the older guy, Jack.
Yeah.
Tell
us a little bit about Theft, actually. Give us the synopsis.
Sure. Theft, also known as Theft of the Drag Queen's Wig, was my second feature film. So Angora Ranch starred Tim Jones, my partner, playing actually my dad, and then I was the one who was playing the older lover, and then Thomas was the younger lover. Well, Tim died, unfortunately, in an accident just 3 weeks before Angora Ranch released.
Sorry.
And I was in the process of writing the next script, and I had a vision for the role that Tim would play in the next script. So instead, what I did was I took time off, and I completely rewrote the script as well. And in rewriting the script, the very beginning of Theft takes place with a leader in the community, in the gay community, having a heart attack on stage at the local gay bar. And so there's a funeral service for this leader who was a great community fundraiser kind of guy. So in some ways, that scene at the very beginning of Theft was my testimony to my lover, to my partner.
Wow.
And we shot that scene the very first day of filming so that I could put Tim to rest, more or less, and he was still in Theft, in spirit, and then I could go on and film the rest of the movie.
Right.
Theft of the Drag Queen's Wig is a political satire. It's about a evangelical preacher who's a woman who is trying to shut down the local gay leather bar, and she's trying to shut down the bar because she realizes that if she has a common enemy within her own church, then she can this way build her church and get more and more congregation members and, you know, make more money, basically,
right,
and donations. But the twist to this, the original title was called Theft of the Drag Queen's Wig, because there is a drag queen who runs the bar. But the evangelical preacher, as the movie progresses, gets more and more outrageous, and in fact, she's really the one who is the drag queen.
Oh, really?
Whereas the man who goes on stage as a drag queen, we also see him out of drag, and we see him in regular civilian clothes, and he's, you know, a regular guy, just
regular
like,
Joe,
me,
yeah,
like you. But the drag queen was really this evangelical preacher who ultimately was kind of crazed. Totally crazy.
Yeah. Wow.
So this was my statement about all these evangelical preachers, and at that time, Terry Falwell just died right at the point that we were filming this movie.
Wow.
So we were kind of like, you know, this is all these preachers who are intentionally picking on the gay community in order to rally the troops to have a common enemy.
Yeah. Now, in Altitude Falling, you take a little leap. You go into the future to 2039, and although it says you're in New Mexico, is there? It's filmed in New Mexico. It kind of looks like Colorado to me a little bit.
Yeah, actually, we filmed all of the actors in this small town south of Austin, Texas. Still, however, my cinematographer Dustin Cross and I went off to southern Colorado, and we filmed action of the Cumbres and Toltec train, which runs between Chama, New Mexico, and Antonito, Colorado. And so there are shots of the train in the film, and that's intercut throughout the course of the film. There's one scene where Cynthia Schiebel is playing a character who's sitting and waiting for the train to come passing by.
And
you'll
she's wearing
the
black hat
the
and the black dress, and she's got the
yes.
umbrella out, and she's drinking her tea. It's a fantastic scene, by the way. Carry on.
So we've got this little smoke machine, so you see the steam going past her as the engine's supposedly passed her by. Well, she's in Lockhart, Texas, which is about 1,000 miles away from Chama, New Mexico. And so I just intercut that with the footage that Dusty and I got of this train, and if you watch the film, it looks like she's really waving at the train, and you see the train going by.
Mm-hmm.
And
then she puts up the umbrella, and all the soot falls on her head. It's a fantastic.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. The timing was perfect.
Well, good. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, to me, it was. There is one thing that's very unique, that's very common to all of my films, and that is that my films are a little bit quirky. And quirky, we used to joke about how quirky is such a bad name, and it's so terrible to be using that. But I realized, you know, this is the way that I write, and these are the kind of people that I'm interested in telling stories about and showing.
Mm-hmm.
I like people who are just a little bit different and kind of interesting. So in Altitude Falling, even though it was a pretty somber movie with a pretty heavy-duty, depressing message, actually, about Big Brother watching us all, I couldn't resist putting in this quirky moment with Grandma doing the wave of the train and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a well-done flick, and actually the I don't want to give the film away, but everybody makes out in the end. Just want to remind everybody, if you're just tuning into The Home of Victoria, you're listening to Paul Bright with Michael Kay. I want to thank everybody up in chat. Dina Stevens, Erin James is actually in chat, our next guest, so I hope you can stick around and listen to her, Paul. All the new guests, Kelly Hughes Whitney from down the street, Marby, our producer in Nashville, Mike Cullop in Maryland, my brother from another mother, and Sandy from Nebraska. Got some questions from chat, Paul. You feel like taking a couple?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Absolutely. Who inspires you the most for your filmmaking?
A number of people. First of all, I really admire John Waters for the fact that his early films, he just kept making the movies as outrageous as they were. And he made these films for hardly any money. They actually were stealing a lot of stuff to make the films, which I'm not really advocating stealing.
Mm-hmm.
However, it was his tenacity in continuing to tell the stories that he wanted to tell, which I truly, truly admire a great deal. I like the fact that Woody Allen is able to make a film every year,
mm-hmm.
the fact that he is so prolific. I'm very much on that target of wanting to continue to make a film every year.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Sandy from Nebraska, I agree with you. I just see your post. I love John Waters, too. I think he's great. He's really great. And so I think these are some of the people who I admire a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I love all kinds of different films, and I love the work that a lot of different directors and writers and actors put on the screen for my pleasure. And, you know, it's a combination of borrowing from lots of different people.
Absolutely. I know all of us have this where you have that one film that you go back to again and again and again, either if you're depressed or you're in a shitty mood or it's cold outside and stuff. My go-to is Postcards from the Edge. To me, that one, I think every time I watch it, it gets funnier and funnier. What's your go-to film?
Well, I have some comfort films. One of them is actually Holiday Inn. It's the old 1939 film that and it's simply because of comfort. It's Fred Astaire and Bing Crosby, and it's just very sweet and tender. I love all three of the Bourne trilogy: the Bourne Ultimatum, Bourne Identity, Bourne Supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown. Pedro Almodovar's original film, not the English version.
Right.
I absolutely loved that film. I remember seeing it when it came out in the movie theater, and I was with my first lover at that time when we were moving. We lived in Albuquerque. We moved to Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that film was just sensational, and I remember the movie theater was totally empty. There was nobody else watching this movie.
Yeah.
I love some of the incredible classics that we've sort of taken into the gay community and adopted as our own, such as The Women.
Right. Absolutely.
It's witty, caustic, hysterically funny. And, you know, and these are films that people just don't generally get anymore, I guess.
Oh, yeah. And how about Whatever Happened to Baby Jane? I mean, please.
Yes.
Absolutely. Fantastic.
And before I make every film, there is a documentary that I watch every time, and the documentary is called Lost in La Mancha. And it is a documentary about Terry Gilliam attempting to make a film adaptation of the story of Man of La Mancha. And The documentary just, he had the worst possible circumstances and worst possible luck in making that film. And so I always watch this documentary before I go into a shoot so that I have the reminder of, you know, things could be much worse. It doesn't matter what happens on my shoot. It can't be possibly as bad as this.
Absolutely, and everybody has a story. Let's remind everybody, too, let's talk about Abrupt Decision now, your latest one out. I know you've got one that you're just finishing editing, but Abrupt Decision, a story about a man loses his job after 25 years. You play the asshole who fires him at the very beginning, which was quite delicious.
Yeah.
But give us another brief synopsis of what Abrupt Decision is about.
Certainly, absolutely. It was based because I had a friend who was going through midlife crisis, and midlife crisis was not what I had always been told it was. It's not about somebody wanting a race car and a young lover. Midlife crisis really is a matter of someone reaching a point in their life and they have no idea what to do next because they had these goals all along set up, and then suddenly they've realized some of the goals or some of the goals are not going to come true, and now they don't know what to do. So with Abrupt Decision, I coupled that with the fact that my boyfriend, who I love sincerely but who I refuse to let see this movie, has a very difficult time making decisions in his life. Really tough time making decisions because he wants to look at all the options and he doesn't want to make a mistake by choosing one thing over another. And so here I took a man in the storyline who's in midlife crisis and I combined it with a reality of not being able to make a decision or to do things in his life. And that is what Abrupt Decision is that here this character played by Steve Callahan, a wonderful actor, had to suddenly be forced into making some of the hardest possible decisions that anyone could ever possibly have to make.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's funny because my partner's mother just emailed me yesterday. She just watched the movie, and she sent me this email telling me how much she and her boyfriend cried watching the film. And everyone who has seen Abrupt Decision winds up shedding a tear, which you, I think, told me that it touched you as well.
Absolutely, and then I touched myself a little, but not to cut you off there, but there are a couple great scenes in the movie when you're watching and stuff. It starts off with this woman going outside. She raises the flag, she shoots it, she does this every morning, and it just basically, you know, pisses the main character off to the point, blah blah blah. Long story short, cut to the middle where the mother actually, I'm going to give it a little bit away, mother dies of a second stroke, and she approaches the car. and tells the story about how the basically the government, the army, had taken her son away. And each morning she goes ahead and shoots that flag out of symbolism and reverence for her son. That was my first tear. Right there, because yeah. You know what? It is so indicative of the fact that no matter how irritating someone can be, is that they always got a story, and you have to listen to that story.
Yeah.
Second cry was when they buried the flag. That was another one, but it was so well done and such touching scenes.
Well, I think the thing about my films is that I love blowing stereotypes. And I mean, I set it up at the beginning of the film about, oh, I recognize what that character is going to be like. That's what they're going to do in this film, and that's what's going to happen next. And every single solitary time, I try to throw that stereotype on its head to do a twist in there to realize, you know, these ideas, these preconceived notions that we have about people are just false.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's much better to really get to know somebody to see what they're really like.
Certainly, because we see each other through our own glasses. You know, we always apply our own beliefs and stuff to judgment. And everybody says remove judgment, fear, ego, and expectation. And believe me, it's a lot harder, you know, said than done. But when you actually do it, it's when you start to develop this compassion and see that, you know, the magic can happen in life if you just, you know, lighten up a little bit.
Yeah, I know.
Another question from Donna from Detroit wants to know, what's your all-time favorite film to hate?
To hate? Ooh.
She's saying a film you saw and just thought it was horrible.
I'm sorry, I've barked out on films because I'm someone who's like, you know, if I just, to hate. Mel Gibson's interpretation of Jesus' life.
Oh, yeah, that one bit the dust.
I really, really, really found that disgusting.
Yeah.
I
recently saw
Burlesque.
You want to talk
about bad, happy movies? Waterworld?
Yeah.
World?
Yeah.
Waterworld was pretty horrible.
Have you seen Burlesque yet?
Yes. And I've got to tell you, in all honesty, I actually loved Burlesque.
Really?
I know.
Paul, you disappoint me.
I thought the dance scenes
were great. I really did. I thought the writing, like someone was, it was too many lines like, and you're in my mirror, why? It was like too many of those kind of schmaltzy things and stuff. But the dance scenes and, you know, Cher, I mean, God love that ball of wax. I really think that thing moves so well for being an animated character. But
well,
I just watched it in pain.
The thing about Burlesque is that I went back because I was watching it so many times to analyze the film. And I realized that there was never more than 90 seconds when there wasn't music going.
Right.
The entire film was a music video. And it moved.
Yeah.
Really
fast. Yeah.
What did it keep it going? Really, really fast. And so I was like, you know, wow, I would love to make a film like this. Now, look, the script of Burlesque is terrible.
Yeah.
And it's very trite. And it's very predictable. And Cher's plastic surgery, well, you know, I'm sure that's not what she expected to happen. So I'm not really going to fault the movie for that. It was the element of the fact that film just zinged in terms of its speed and pace. And I'm going, wow, I want to do that. I want to make a film like that. Anyway.
Did you see any of the Oscar movies up this year?
I did. I saw The Artist, which I was delighted by. I don't think it was the most extraordinary film in the world, but I did really, really like it. I saw Tree of Life, and it's funny. Tree of Life was filmed in Smithfield, Texas. Smithfield, Texas is about 30 miles from where I lived. And I knew people who were extras in Tree of Life, and I know people who worked on the crew for that film. And it brought in a decent-sized budget for Texas, and Texas is always looking for films because they're wanting to have work for their local employees. But there is not a single person I've spoken to who really knows what Tree of Life is about, or they walk away saying that Tree of Life is about blah, 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 and then nobody else has that same point of view on it at all. And, of course, Terrence Malick refuses to say what the film is about. So my thought is, I'm not sure he really knows what that film is about. He just made this movie.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Got to go back to the chat room. Paul Sandy from Nebraska wants to ask, Paul, what is the one message you would want to get across to people with your films?
definitely look beyond the stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
Look to see who people really are. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I was gay and I worked so many years of my life in situations where people had never met someone that they knew was gay before.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time I met coworkers and, you know, neighbors and so forth, they had these expectations that because I fit into this stereotype, that I would be a certain way and I would behave a certain way,
mm-hmm.
which clearly was not accurate as to who I am. And so, yeah, my films have always been following on this look at stereotypes. And the second theme is skewering hypocrisy. So the film that I'm editing now, which comes out in May, is, you know, the lead female is Shannon Lark, who is a screen queen nominated by Fangoria. Extraordinary actress. I mean, she's just incredible. I'm enjoying editing this so much. But I mean, one of the lines in the script is she says, you know, hypocrisy is the root of all evil.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the message of Goliad Uprising, and that really is the message of Theft. That's the message of so many of my films, even in Angora Ranch. In Angora Ranch, one of the fathers talks about, you know, how you should be doing these things and you shouldn't do that. And the truth is, when he looks back into his own past, he's done those things.
Yeah.
So, you know, just come clean, people. Just be who you are and be open and honest about who you are. And don't try to get other people to fit into a box.
Well, I think people have to go ahead and do that because I think a lot of times people don't know what they're looking at. I think people have, I hate to use the term, but I think people have their heads so far up their butt sometimes, so concerned and driven by their own preoccupation, you know, the mother who's stopping to get coffee, to go to work, to get into the car and stuff. There's no sense of I have to pay attention to other people around me. And I think there are a lot of, I mean, I saw it in New York a lot too, where I actually I stayed on East 50 at this time, and as I was walking up, there's the food bank right across from the church and everything like that. And I absolutely saw people cross the street in front of, you know, the food bank. And I thought, wow, you know what? That is such an absolute indication of where you just don't want to see it.
Yeah.
So I don't know why people, you know, tend to do that. I think that's half the thing that's screwing up this country right now, but that's just me. But, yeah, it's a funny monster. But tell us again the title of your last film that you're putting together.
Yeah, well, Goliad Uprising comes out in May. The film that's available right now is Abrupt Decision.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you can get all these films on Amazon, but with Abrupt Decision, I can actually sell this movie off of the Abrupt Decision website for less money than you pay if you go to Amazon. So if you want to get the DVD for cheap without a distributor involved, you can go directly to abruptdecision.com and get the DVD, and it would be shipped to you in mail that day that you ordered.
And rumor has it you'll autograph them. Is that true?
If you ask, I'll be glad to autograph. Absolutely. I'll even kiss it if you want.
There we go. Buddy, I can't wait to go ahead and see your new film. I'm expecting an autographed copy because I already bought four of yours. But I want to thank you so much. This half hour has flown by, man. Did you have a good time?
Oh, Michael, I love talking to you, man. You are totally awesome.
Well, I'm a mirror, my friend, but I can't wait. Please, I will say this, as I say to all the guests, please consider your home here at Home with Victoria all the time. And if you have anything out new in the pipeline, buddy, just give me a dingle and we'll have you back on.
All right, great. Thank you.
Cool beans. I so appreciate and love to all your fans. They're squawking up in the chat room. So are you in chat too, Paul?
I am in chat, and I've been talking to you, so I can't really type in chat.
See, I'm that's why I have Marilyn. Marilyn takes care of all this stuff for me, but for all the guests up in chat. Feel free to go ahead and stay on the line, too. I'm just going to go ahead and mute you, but stay on and chat, Paul. Everybody wants to go ahead and ask you questions in the chat personally, so take the time
all right,
to
definitely.
Deliver
I'm
your public.
Okay.
So great talking to you. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks, Mike.
Paul Bright, filmmaker, actor, producer, director, cookie maker and all that fantastic thing. A great guy. Go ahead and pick up his films. Again, you can go ahead and find them on Amazon.com or go actually to AbruptDecision.com. You can go ahead and get his latest one there, his new film out in May 2012. However, I got Erin James waiting here, and I don't want to make her wait anymore because I know she did her hair for this lovely, charming young lady, but I do want to start off with a little bit of song, so we're going to start off with Southern Belle from Erin James. Stay tuned. She's coming up to take up your questions. Take care. Hold on.
Thought him and I were invincible. Had our love wrapped up tight. Thought my heart was unbreakable until that train walked in my life. My man was drinking double twins. He walked in, had a church girl's dress and a devil's grin. Georgia accent and her legs were long. Southern Belle, Southern Belle, who you love, it's hard to tell. Come on, say you're gonna spell. Gonna cast in your spell. Twinkle in your eyes, just ruin my life. You're going to hell, Southern Belle. Later that night, I saw his car at the Drake Motel. What I saw, I could not believe. That was my man in her arms, another victim of a charm. I looked at her, she looked at me. My eyes fell with jealousy. Southern Belle, Southern Belle, who you love, it's hard to tell. Come on, say you're gonna bet. Won't cast in your spell. Twinkling.
Southern Belle. Erin James, you're not going to hell, girl. I know you're not.
I don't know. I'm not done living yet.
That's exactly right. You got too much to do. How are you, my doll?
I'm doing great, and it's a good thing. I did not do my hair. It's a good thing you don't have this on video because I'm a hot mess.
Oh, you know. Honey, you just lie to people. I mean, I'm wearing a tux to somebody. I'm wearing sweats and, you know, my hair's in a bun. So, I mean, really.
I couldn't even go to Walmart in this outfit.
Oh, no, child. Oh, thank heavens. Thank heavens. Erin, thanks for joining us on Our Home with Victoria. I'm so happy to have you here, doll. You're a Maryland native. You grew up in a music family. Your mother was in a band. What band was your mother in?
She was in a band called Branded. They you know, toured the little five-state region there playing top 40 hits and Moose Lodges and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And good times. I grew up in bars, so I just love country music and singing to people in honky-tonks and whatnot. So.
Absolutely. Now, you're originally from Taylorsville, right?
Yes.
And what's it like growing up in Taylorsville?
There is a liquor store, a 7-Eleven, a traffic light.
But you have
everyone
one.
Drives a pickup truck.
My God, it sounds like my hometown.
Yeah, where are you from?
I'm from a small town, Priestville, Saskatchewan. It was a population 1,240, and that included all of the skunks and squirrels and stuff. I mean, it was a very, very small town. But how big is Taylorsville, roughly?
Very, very small. I have some friends from Saskatchewan. I love them. They're awesome.
Oh, really? Wow.
I see,
I know because you actually pronounced Saskatchewan correctly. I saw Ellen the other day. I thought she was going to trip all over the word.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you and them are any indication of what people from Saskatchewan are like, then y'all rock.
Oh, we're a rocking people. We're very durable, especially during the wintertime. But let's talk about some of your training. I mean, you got pipes, darling. I mean, you've got a great sound about you. You're no stranger to music. Did you have training growing up?
Just kind of like I said, in bars. Just you know, playing with as many people as I could, getting as many influences as I could musically. I wish I had YouTube back then.
Like,
I'd be so much better of a musician. Like, I'm learning licks off of 12-year-olds on YouTube, seriously, on my Instagram.
Oh yeah. What is some of the stuff you're watching on YouTube right now? Sometimes I get into these little realms where I get spinning off, because I'm a big, I love good talent and stuff, so I get spinning, and I found this little guy from England that he just basically does this blog. I think it's Charlie St. Clair or Charlie St. Cloud or whatever. But what are you watching on YouTube right now?
You know, I guess it just varies, but different musicians. I'm learning a lot off a girl named Sierra Hall on mandolin. She's probably 20, but I was learning her licks from when she was 12. I'm still not up to her 20-year-old skills. I'm learning her 12-year-old skills now.
Yeah, but you play like 10 instruments, don't you?
Yeah, I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. That's what I always say. I can play a little bit of everything. Mandolin's probably my best. I always say in Nashville, if you're female, you have to play fiddle.
Mm-hmm.
Walk down Broadway at any given time, there's always a female fiddle player. So I've learned how to play that fairly well, and of course acoustic to back myself up and right on piano too. But.
Yeah, well, you've been in Nashville what, for 15 years now?
10.
10.
10 years.
Have you seen a change since when you first got there, or is it just that your adult eyes are looking at different things now?
Big change. So when I first came to Nashville, everyone was playing Merle Haggard and Waylon, and you know, like they're supposed to. And now you walk down Broadway, and it's Guns N' Roses and Journey.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad. It really is.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I love Journey and Guns N' Roses, but I would rather go to L.A. and hear bands cover that stuff than, you know, I want to hear my traditional stuff when I come to Nashville. Not to say it's not there, but it's just less.
No, but there is certainly a different uptown Nashville that is. Could it be that people are... People can't be tired of country music in Nashville. Is that possible?
No, but when you turn on the radio, you don't know if you're listening to country anymore. A lot. I mean, of course, there's people like Brad Paisley and Easton Corbin and stuff like that. George Strait is always staying true to his roots, Alan Jackson. But, you know, Lady Antebellum, Taylor Swift, Carrie Underwood. Like, I just listened to Carrie's new single, and I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't sound country at all. Which I'm not, like, busting on her or anything, but... Like, I don't know if I'm listening to Christian contemporary, light rock, pop. I don't know what I'm listening to sometimes when I turn on the radio.
Yeah,
I like
to
preserve some tradition. And of course, you can take that tradition and do your own thing with it. But
well, I think that's what Carrie Underwood did. I mean, I saw the cover. The cover of her new album was leaked, and I thought, well, that is no Loretta Lynn album, or that is no Cassie Cline album, because, you know, she's got a leg out there with the wind blowing in her white dress and her hair all doo-da-did. And granted, she's a lovely woman, but it just has strayed so far from classic country, which I think that's what you're actually bringing back to it. Now, I'm going to ask you to go ahead and drop some names, because you've opened up for some pretty impressive people. So go ahead, and we'll trip all over your famedom.
I just opened up for Uncle Cracker like last month, I think. And I guess Brooks and Dunn. Jason Aldean. I have a hard time remembering this kind of stuff. Brooks and Dunn was probably one of the bigger ones. I'd have to look at my... I did a Rascal Flatts kind of after party thing. That was pretty big.
Right.
And, yeah, I can't remember all of them, but...
Yeah.
Keith Anderson, Cowboy Troy, stuff like that.
And you newly got engaged, is that true, to Mr. Cody Lepo, the famous drummer that I enjoy so much?
We have been together since we were... 17 and 18 years old.
Really?
So we've been together like 12 or 13 years. I guess it was just time.
Well, yeah, I mean, after 13 years, he should put a ring on it, because you never know what the hell's going to happen.
I know. But I don't think I'll get married until I'm ready to have kids. I just don't really see a reason to.
Yeah, well, no. You got to keep that figure, because you have to go on performing. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I rebel against tradition anyway. Like anything that you're supposed to do, I don't want to do.
Get a plant and save your figure.
Exactly.
Speaking about plants here, I listened to Wilted Flower the other day, and before we go ahead and play it, give us a little bit of an inside track on Wilted Flower.
I guess one of my favorite all-time records is, and this is totally off of that style, but Alanis Morissette, the raw, like, female emotion of being burnt and just sad. And, of course, Adele is doing a great, you know, job of portraying that emotion. It could be anybody that's just hurt. So I listen to a lot of bluegrass. I'm in the kitchen cooking. I started singing the melody. A lot of my songs, I do three emotions, misery, sadness, or crazy. And I kind of combine them all in that song, I guess.
Absolutely. Before we go ahead and play this, did you catch the Grammys at all?
Yes. Yeah.
What did you think of Nicki Minaj? I've been asking everybody this. For God's sake, I don't get it.
That was awful.
See, to me, that's what I thought. It's just an overly produced number, and then the vocals were horrible. So I don't know if that's what I don't know if that's what I should be talking about, or the fact that maybe something was really brilliant to her, and I don't get it.
Yeah, that's what I was questioning myself. I'm like, maybe I'm getting old. I don't know. I was like, I don't get it. She's trying to like do the Lady Gaga thing, but you can't take someone else. I guess that just shock value and do this theatrics, but she does it. Lady Gaga does it so well. And she's backed it up with talent and amazing songwriting and melodies. It's just not working.
Yeah. Well, we don't get old, honey. We just wilt a little bit. But for everybody, we're going to go ahead and take your questions for Erin James right after this. This is Erin James with Wilted Flower.
Erin James.
Erin James is a wilted flower tonight.
Yeah.
But she looks fantastic and dewy fresh. So your songs are definitely riddled with heartache and pain and everything, but you're no stranger to that because you yourself are able to kind of self-subsidize your career by being thank God you went into medicine right after school and then got your nursing. Are you an ER nurse or an RN?
Yeah, I'm a RN in the emergency room here in downtown Nashville.
Wow. Now you must have some stories involving like animals and light bulbs and stuff.
Oh, yes, totally. Oh, God, yeah, every day. Trailer hitches and all kinds of stuff. But I have a very warped sense of humor.
I do, too. So we will seriously get together and have a little shot of something and have some giggling because I can tell that we're kind of twisted and bent in that direction, but
and they call me the bum whisperer at work because I know all the homeless people, and I love them. They sit and drink. I didn't know you could get drunk off mouthwash. I'd learned that being in the ER, and I wish I would have known that when I was in school because you can just drink a gallon of mouthwash and.
That's why mouthwash comes in different colors, so they can make shooters.
No. Yes, that's awesome. Yeah, I didn't know.
See? Hello, there's a B-52 for you. A little bit of Crest, a little bit of
Listerine.
You need
to put some of that on your feet instead of drinking it all. They smell really bad, but I love them.
Yeah,
I know most of them by name, and they love me because I feed them. So,
Yeah, you must see a lot in the hospital. Now, if you could, what? How do I put this? You went into nursing as a fallback. And then you always pursued music, though? Did you know at one time you would have to eat something?
I have to thank my mom, really, for pushing me through college because, I was, like I said, very rebellious. I didn't want to do, any of that. I was kind of naive. I thought, I'm going to be a rock star. Here I am 10
right.
years later and still struggling a little bit. But I just thank her so much for making me go, finish school because I graduated at 22, so I've been a nurse for a while.
Yeah.
And it helps.
Yeah, it certainly does. It certainly covers the bills and stuff. What are you working on now? What's your latest and stuff? I know you're getting a little bit excited about this new project coming up.
Yeah, I'm honored to have worked with the musicians I did on this latest project. I mean, Brent Mason, Stuart Duncan. I mean, God, I just feel so blessed to work with him on a project. Randy Coors, Shannon Forrest, Glenn Wharf, some of my all-time favorite musicians I got to work with. So several of them have won Grammys and all that. So it's definitely some good picking. I want to honor the musicians in this town and always feature them on my records.
Mm-hmm.
I'm writing. I've been writing a ton lately. You go through creative spells. Like sometimes I'll go through a dry spell 3 months and nothing. Lately, I've been turning out a song every other day. I've been very, inspired. And so I'll probably be going into recording again here soon. That's what happened.
What are you? I'm scrolling up the type here. I got a few questions and stuff and from the chat room, but for some reason, Marilyn, if you can find them, go ahead and put them up for me. Who are you listening to in your iPod, honey? Who do you value nowadays versus classic?
I this is really bad, but Hank 3.
Really?
I don't know if anybody knows who he is, but he's Hank the Third, Hank Williams the Third. I just dig his stuff. He's really bad. I mean, it's parental advisory all the way. And then
really?
Who is this new girl singer that I'm just in love with her voice? Price Tag's one of her songs, and I'm trying to remember. Nikki. Oh, anyway, she's in my iPod. Adele, of course, but always Waylon, Willie, and Merle. I kind of wear out their material. I always kind of flock to Merle Haggard, Waylon Jennings.
Are you a fan of Patsy Cline, Loretta Lynn, that whole June Carter Cash and Tammy Wynette? I know because I'm partial to female voices. I'm not a big fan of male voices for some reason. Male voices can get irritating to me, but I do have my handful of what I like. But are you part of that classic country crowd where you value them?
Yeah, I guess I'm more of a tomboy because I flock
right.
to the males. Loretta, I love the way she writes. She totally writes like she's talking to you, and she's kind of cutesy and clever and told stories just, I mean, totally inspired by Loretta Lynn. As far as, I wasn't blessed with the pipes to really get into Patsy. I can't, you know, idolize her because I can't sing a note that she sings. I mean,
yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
But, yes, of course, I've definitely graduated from Honky Tonk U. I love them all.
What do you think of the Reba McEntire-Kelly Kelly Clarkson team-up?
It's not my bag, but, yeah, you know, more power to them. I mean,
yeah.
that Reba, if I were a boy, Beyonce remake kind of scared me a little bit.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't have a lot of people to look up to nowadays as far as females in country. I have Miranda Lambert and Pistol Annies. I mean, that's really all I have.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I love Miranda's story. I think it's great, and I'm a big fan of Blake's, and I'm hoping to have actually Blake coming on the show soon, but that's from my lips to God's ears. But got a question from chat from Paul Bright. If a reality show asked to follow you around, would you agree to it?
Oh, totally. I've actually been, you know, shooting some ideas across some people that I know that I think it would be amazing to portray, like, the struggling artist. People need to see what we go through. It's not like, you know, there's so many American Idol and National Star people. Like, I think everyone needs to know what it's like to be, like, a real musician.
Right.
Like, it kind of sucks sometimes. It really does.
Well, if you have done that, actually, we had on Scott Carey, who actually did The Long Road to Nashville, and it's a YouTube series. And Scott Carey, are you familiar with Scott Carey at all?
No, I'll have to look it up when I get off.
Well, look it up. It's Carey. You know what? The kid is gorgeous. Just this gorgeous young little guy and stuff, has a really cool voice. He accompanied Madonna to the, I think it was the 1984-86 other VMAs or whatever the hell it was. But a good-looking kid, good sound and stuff. He's got some really cool things coming up. But I think the two of you should actually team up. He's down there your way too. But just as I'm hearing your songs and getting your attitude, Scott too is hilarious. He's got a twisted sense of humor, just like we do. So we'll get along fantastic.
All right.
Sandy from Nebraska wants to know, what was the worst job you ever had as a struggling musician?
I guess being a truck stop waitress was really bad. As far as, like, band jobs go, inner city Baltimore with gunshots going off and
charming.
Just people doing it in the bathroom that are nasty, just smelling really bad. And, yeah.
Oh, good God. So when's the date for you and Cody? Have you decided one?
No, not at all. Like I said, I'm not like your traditional chick. I don't really value. I don't like. It's not a goal for me to have babies and get married. It's just not. You know, that's never been a thing for me. I mean, if it happens, great. But you know.
Yeah. Well, no, you got some singing to do, girl. Is what you got to do. So that's what you have to continue, honey. We're running out of time, but where can we find you? I know you're on Reverb Nation. I know we can find you on Facebook / Erin James ErinJames. Where else can we find you? You're on iTunes as well.
Yeah, CD Baby, iTunes, anywhere you can find music, I'm there.
Absolutely, and keep looking at my page. We'll go ahead and keep posting your songs, Erin. But I want to thank you for taking the time out to visit tonight. Please, I will say this to you, as I say to everybody, consider At Home with Victoria your home. Anytime you got something coming to the pike, please join us. I adore you, and I'm so happy. I tried calling you yesterday. I hadn't talked to her tomorrow. So I'm so happy we finally got to go ahead and sit and chat, and let's do this again real soon, okay?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. Big fun. Thank you.
My absolute pleasure, honey. We're going to end with one of your songs. You have a great night, and hugs to Cody. Tell him to make you an honest woman, okay?
Sure thing.
Love you tons, girl. Take care. Erin James, charming, delightful, and absolutely a pleasure. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. Paul Bright, filmmaker from New York, who's still up in chat. And Paul, you should go ahead and hit her up on doing that reality series. I think she's eager for the picking. I want to go ahead and thank Deanna Stevens, Erin James, Goofy Bone for joining us. Hey, brother. Guest 1030, guest 7466, guest 79756. Marby in Nashville, fantastic job producing. Mike Cullip, my brother from another mother, Paul Bright in the chat room, and and Cindy from Nebraska. I want to thank you all for joining us tonight. We're going to end with more Aaron James called Herald of Paradise. But from Michael Kay and Victoria Gaither for At Home with Victoria, I want to thank you for tuning in. Be kind to one another. This is Aaron James with Herald of Paradise.
Is it right here? What you doing over there? I didn't mean to stare. One kiss is all that I would need to ruin this good day, but I don't think I care. The one is gift. Going there is no knowing how bad it's gonna get.
On iTunes as a free podcast and like us on Facebook.
I'm Shelly Rand, musician and announcer for At Home with Victoria. Download my CD on iTunes and Amazon and friend me on Facebook.